Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Yes!
Now, this song reminds me of the movie Pineapple Express, which I thought was a bit disappointing. Did you love that
what?
Film? I don't know.
It's a fantastic film.
Here's my thing on Pineapple Express. You'll understand why I thought it was a little disappointing. So, you know, when I was a younger man, circa 2008. I think that's when didn't this come out the same summer that Step Brothers came out, right?
Yes, it did.
It did. So here's what I did that day with my girlfriend at the time. We did that move that every early 20s would move. You'd go to the theater to see a movie, then you hang out there for a while, you stay and you see another movie. So we did one of the we did one of those two for ones.
I kind of see what happened here. So you saw Step Brothers. And then you saw Pineapple Express?
Actually, the opposite. I saw Pineapple Express first.
Oh,
and then I thought, okay, that's pretty good. And then I saw Step Brothers, and my mind was blown. Mine was blown, because I had no expectation for Step Brothers, right? And I was even a Will Ferrell fan, but the trailers for that movie, like, it just looked like, oh, this is probably going to be really bad, right? But then Pineapple Express, because, oh, this is so funny. There's a weed movie. Oh, everyone's going to love the weed. It's so trendy to make a weed movie. Like, oh, we're all going to love the weed movie. So I saw the weed movie. It was all right. And then, you know, you hang around the theater for a bit. 20 minutes later, we go in and see the masterpiece that was Step Brothers. And my life was changed forever. I had high expectations for the weed movie that was okay. But then for Step Brothers, I was thinking, man, this is probably going to be terrible. And then the Catalina wine mixer happened, and my life was never the same after that. That was tremendous. So I think for that reason, I couldn't really give the movie a fair shake because I saw it on the same day that I saw Step Brothers. So I think it's hard. Like, that's a hard bar to judge a movie by, man. Wow. So I just sent out a photo of the fact that I am you got to set this guy straight on Twitter, Tito. So I am the only QAMer who remembered to observe Jersey Tuesday today. Usually me, Falero, and Tito are all in. But Tito, you forgot it was Jersey Tuesday. Falero forgot it was Jersey Tuesday.
Yeah, I messed up today. My bad.
So as I always do, I'm repping Inter Milan today because I've got at least 10 Inter jerseys. So I have enough to get through 10 Jersey Tuesdays without even doubling up. And I've got a new Raja Nainggolan, which I'm repping today. I tweet out the picture, and then Georgie Bangi tweets to me, "Bandwagon, he just got there. I should wear his real kit." Tito, explain to this guy how I'm not a bandwagon fan. I live and die with that team.
Dono is the official Miami representative of Inter Milan here. If anybody, it's Dono.
I think what this lowlife is saying is I should be representing his Roma kit. Guess what? After Luciano Spalletti left Roma for Inter, no one else could figure out how to manage that guy. Raja Nainggolan, he's a head case, he's a smoker, he's a party animal. There's only one manager who could control that guy, and that's now his manager at Inter. If you think I'm a bandwagon fan, get out of here. And I've always been a Raja fan. I've been a Nainggolan fan even when he was at Roma. Obviously, I didn't support him the way I support my own players, but I've been thinking for years, that's the type of player I would love to have playing for my team. And now that he's playing for my team, I'm thrilled beyond belief.
He's a vet. He is a vet, and he's going to bring an instant impact to your Inter squad.
Fantastic. I love it. I found something interesting, by the way, at the Miami Herald. Three areas the Hurricanes can look to improve their recruiting results, right? If our buddy Charles is listening, Charles is very critical of Mark Richt. He doesn't think Mark Richt is an elite coach. I think he's being way too picky. If you expect Miami is always going to have Nick Saban, which, you know, it's never been the case here, but if you think any coach who's not Nick Saban is a failure, I think you're setting yourself up for constant failure. I think Mark Richt can absolutely win in Miami. And so far, his recruiting classes have been dynamite. But here are three areas that he can improve upon, that the Canes can look to improve upon. Just eight of the state's top 20 class, class of 2019 prospects have announced their college commitments so far, and just one of them has chosen the Miami Hurricanes. That's Jacksonville wide receiver Jeremiah Payton. The Canes have taken some hits on that top 20 list, losing wide receiver John Dunmore of Hollywood Chaminade to Penn State earlier this month, and losing receiver Frank Ladson of South Dade to Clemson in April. In addition, St. Thomas Aquinas safety Jordan Battle chose Ohio State in June, and Palm Beach Central cornerback Akeem Dent has been committed to Florida State since last year. Miami does have commitments from players ranked 21, 23, 37, 38, and 44 among the state's top 50. But what the Canes can do to get more elite top, but what can the Canes do to get more elite top 20 type talents down to Coral Gables? Here are three things that that should be on the UM wish list. Number one, continue to build on its relationship with the coaches and players at IMG Academy in Bradenton. No other school in the state has as many elite athletes as IMG, which can boast five of the top 15 this year, according to 24/7 Sports. Among top 20 IMG players, defensive end Nolan Smith, ranked number one in the state, regardless of position, has committed to Georgia. Ooh, Kirby Smart, that's Mark Richt's old stomping grounds. And wide receiver Josh Delgado has chosen Oregon. It always weirds me out when Florida kids choose to go to Oregon. Like, what's the move there? It's got to be either you're blown away by the scheme, you're blown away by the facilities, or you're blown away by the fact that they have like 400 different jersey combinations.
Isn't it like, speaking about jerseys that like are safe to get, I feel like getting an Oregon jersey is not safe because they just get new ones every year.
Yeah,
like, one you buy, you're never going to see
again. Like, the jersey that you buy, they're going to wear it one time. And then they've got 199 other jerseys in the rotation. I guess every jersey of theirs is a collector's item. Although, I was just thinking of maybe a factor that got this kid to Oregon. Is Mario Cristobal still there? He's the head coach now. That's right. He was on the staff there. He's the head coach now. Maybe that is why more Florida kids are going to Oregon. That did run through my head there. But running back Trey Sanders and guards Evan Neal and Diavi Hammond are uncommitted IMG players ranked among the top 20 in the state. Another factor, own Broward County, they say. It's a great year for talent in the Fort Lauderdale area, including Cardinal Gibbons defensive end Chris Bogle, University School safety Josh Singanetti, Deerfield Beach linebacker Jamon Eford, and University School running back Kenny McIntosh. All four of those players are undeclared and ranked among the state's top 25 prospects overall. So do better in Broward County, they're saying. Number three, develop the talent they sign. I think that's already improving, by the way. From the Al Golden era to the Mark Richt era, I think you're already seeing better player development. But continuing, recruiting is only half the equation. Development is vital, and many of the players the Canes have on their commitment list are substantially underweight for their positions. Most players their age will get bigger and stronger naturally as they mature into college athletes, but it's not always a given. For now, committed Canes who really need to hit the weight room and the training table include 6 foot, 190-pound linebacker Anthony Solomon, 5'9", 148-pound cornerback Takori Couch, 6'3", 200-pound linebacker Avery Huff, and 6'1", 195-pound linebacker Samuel Brooks. Now, I do think Miami has an excellent strength and conditioning program with Gus Felder, and also the strength staff does take the cues of the head coaching staff, right? Like, I thought Andrew Swayze, who was the previous strength guy, I think Gus Felder is a step above Swayze, but Andrew Swayze, I thought, took too much flack from fans, right? Because when Andrew Swayze was developing athletes in the early 2000s who were dominating with speed and explosiveness, he was God. And then Al Golden comes in, and Al Golden tells Andrew Swayze, I need you to make my players bigger and slower. He was just doing what he was told, man. I mean, I thought that they ruined the career of Anthony Ciccolo, for example. Like, Anthony Ciccolo, to me, who knows how good he could have been in college, how good of a pro prospect he could have been if they had allowed him to play at his natural weight and dominate with his speed and athleticism. Instead, oh, we got to get this kid as close to 300 pounds as possible.
They did that with so many kids, Dono. Like, Tyreek McCord is another example of another guy who was, like, a high-rated four-star prospect coming out of Tampa, and they beefed him up to the point where he was almost just, like, obsolete in the NFL.
Yeah. No, you're right about that. I thought they did a lot of players a disservice, but I blame that more on the coaching staff than on the strength staff, because I do believe the strength and conditioning coach, he serves at the pleasure of the head coach, right? The strength and conditioning coach, the coach will tell them, I want this linebacker to get up to 250. I want this guy to keep his 4.3 speed, but get up to 195, this safety, this corner. So I believe that they try and meet the objectives of the head coach. And if Al Golden was going to Andrew Swayze saying, I need you to make everybody bigger at all costs, just make these guys bigger, I think he took a lot. And again, I'm happy Gus Felder is here, but I think Andrew Swayze in the last couple of years took too much flack from fans because I believe he was doing what he was told.
I feel like Golden just wanted everybody to look like the Michelin Man. Just like everybody look at the Michelin Man or look like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
We want to have a team full of sumo wrestlers, man. That's what we want here. 560-22 is how you get at us on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line. You can get in via the phone lines at 305-567-0560 or 954-567-0560. You know, on the Miami Dolphins, I want to read part of this piece that Omar Kelly wrote because this is something to watch out for. Stephen Ross made it pretty clear at the owners' meetings and also in the fact that those reports of Stephen Ross questioning whether, hey, is Minkah Fitzpatrick really the guy that we want or should we trade down for more value? That shows to you that he is starting to question his football people, that Stephen Ross is starting to, I believe, lose a little patience in the brain trust who makes decisions on football-related stuff. So Omar Kelly asked the question, could Stephen Ross hit the reset button if the Dolphins don't produce a winning season? Ross, whose franchise owns a 76-84 record and two playoff berths, no playoff wins, by the way, during his 10-year run following the late H. Wayne Huizenga's ownership, has never done a full-fledged reset, purging and then hiring new leadership, a VP of football operations, general manager, head coach, and his staff from top to bottom at the same time. And that's true. Anytime Stephen Ross has fired somebody, if he's firing the GM, the head coach stays. Fires the head coach, the GM stays. There's never been a full-fledged reset. He's done it in pieces, Omar writes, forcing two VPs of football to work with three different head coaches and three different general managers, but he's never done one major reboot, letting one person hire everyone and building with a uniform vision. That might be what's needed if this offseason's moves fail to make the 2018 Dolphins respectable. Apathy is the worst fear of any sports franchise, and the Dolphins fan base is well on that journey because of the past decade plus of mediocrity. I've been on that roller coaster, my friends. I mean, one of the worst feelings in the world is not having feelings, right? One of the worst feelings in the world is the Dolphins lose a howler of a game, and you're saying, you know what, I'm numb to this now, right? A heartbreaking defeat to the Patriots or the Bills or whoever, I'm numb to it at this point. That the worst feeling is not having a feeling on that. It's ultimately Ross's responsibility to make the Dolphins a winning franchise, one that's competitive on the field because he's responsible for hiring the right people. Yet, that seems to be the one aspect of ownership where he struggled. If your leadership isn't up to the task, where is your organization headed? That's one major question Ross needs to answer this season before this organization has put a ton of faith in Mike Tannenbaum's decisions, Chris Greer's eye for talent, and Adam Gase's ability to develop a quarterback and produce a potent offense. But none of them have truly excelled at those tasks so far. Tannenbaum spent this offseason undoing most of the moves he made when he took over as VP of football back in 2015. Greer's three draft classes have provided mixed results so far and lacks an impact player. Tannehill remains an unfinished product, and the Dolphins have possessed a mediocre offense with Gase as the play caller the past 2 years. If this season's team isn't competing for a playoff spot in December and doesn't produce a winning record by season's end, no matter the injuries, Ross should consider pressing the reset button, this time sparing no one. Wow. I think that's short, powerful, to the point by Omar Kelly, and I guarantee you Stephen Ross is aware of that possibility, right? It doesn't mean he's not hopeful that you start to see the fruits of Gase's and Greer's labor and even Tannenbaum's labor. But we know Mr. Ross hates to lose, and he's done a lot of losing. A below 500 record since taking over as owner 10 years ago. If you have another 6-10 season, 7-9 season, Mr. Ross, who's in his 70s, I think at some point you have to say, you know what? I've never ripped the Band-Aid off. I've always either retained a GM, fired a head coach, retained a GM. I've never done the full-fledged reset button. Maybe this has got to be my last act here as owner to really reset it and start from scratch. You have to wonder about that, man. You have to wonder because I think Mr. Ross showed some signs during the offseason that he no longer has that blind faith in his football people, questioning the first-round draft pick, you know, kind of mentioning, I don't exactly know if we're all on the same page sometimes. I think you're seeing some signs that Mr. Ross is starting to lose patience in his football people.
This feels like a circle, Dono. I feel like we've been here before not too long ago.
Maybe that time that he tried to bring in Jim Harbaugh and then failed and then announced an extension for Tony Sperano. That was kind of awkward.
Wait, we did that?
You don't remember that?
I remember us talking to Jim Harbaugh while Tony Sperano was still employed.
Yeah.
But I didn't know we followed that up by extending Sperano.
Yeah, which he didn't see the end of that extension anyway. I can remember that presser. I wasn't there in person, but I watched it on the internet, or I watched it like on local news live. So this was after, like, Stephen Ross got in his jet, went out to, because remember, this was when Jim Harbaugh was still at Stanford. This was before he went to 49ers. So he flies out to Palo Alto, California to meet with Jim Harbaugh, even though, and I do think, by the way, that Mr. Ross has learned from that. I don't think he would do something like this again. He was still very new as an NFL owner, but he had a coach under contract, flew out to try and recruit another head coach. The prospective head coach Harbaugh said, well, I'm not coming here because the job is not even open. So then he flies back to Miami and has to face the awkwardness of everybody knowing he flew out to try and woo Harbaugh. So then they have to announce a Tony Sperano extension, and they held the most awkward news conference. Like, Sperano was, like, wearing sunglasses. Like, he, like, wouldn't look anybody in the eyes. Like, that was just an uncomfortable, uncomfortable situation.
This hurts.
Being a Dolphin fan?
Yeah.
New edition of Clickbait. We'll liven up the mood a little bit coming up next.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Hasselhoff, baby. Happy 66th birthday to the Hoff. Number one in Germany, number one in my heart. I don't know why more Americans don't appreciate the great music of Hasselhoff.
I found out today that he covered this song, and it's fantastic.
It's all a cappella, right? There's no instrument here. It's all people singing.
Hoffapella.
Oh, no. Sorry, there was an instrument there. Yeah, instruments. Well, he had me going there with a hoffapella.
Hoffapella.
Oh, man. You know, I asked earlier in the show, what do you remember David Hasselhoff from most? When you hear the name David Hasselhoff, do you think of Knight Rider? Do you think of Baywatch? Or do you think of his music career? Most of the responses we got were Knight Rider. I think of him more for Baywatch. That was more my wheelhouse, early 90s. I'm an adolescent boy, 11 p.m. on Channel 39. Baywatch would come on, giddy up, right? Like, that was fantastic. And not especially for Hasselhoff or other things. But he was great in that show. He carried that show acting-wise.
I remember him because he was in Dodgeball. And he's the coach of the German team.
Oh, that's right. I totally forgot he was in that.
He, like, spikes a photo of himself in front of the team, and they all start crying.
So he was playing himself, right? Like, he wasn't just, like, playing the random coach. Like, that was David Hasselhoff, coach of the German team.
It was just like a cameo. Like, he showed up, spiked the thing, and that's it.
You know, it's funny. That's another movie that I didn't appreciate that much. And I've probably seen Dodgeball 10 times, but that came out the same summer as Anchorman. Anchorman, the more memorable picture out of the two.
Yeah, but Dodgeball is a classic. So is Anchorman. But Dodgeball is a classic.
But here's the thing. I didn't see him the same day. Like, I saw Pineapple Express, which is okay, and Step Brothers unbelievable. Like, I saw those two movies the same day, so that ruined Pineapple Express for me. Oh, like, at some point, a weed joke every 3 seconds stops being funny, right? Like, if the entire integrity of your movie is you make a marijuana joke or a stoner joke every 3 seconds, at some point it's going to get old. And then I see Step Brothers that same day. That's a classic right there. I think I think it was the summer of 03 when Dodgeball came out. I see Dodgeball. This is, just out of high school, right before I started college. Every weekend was movie weekend for me in those days. So I think I go and see Dodgeball on a Saturday, Anchorman, or Dodgeball on a Friday, Anchorman on a Saturday. And Anchorman was the most memorable part of that weekend. Very low expectations for Anchorman, and it was unbelievable. Very high expectations for Dodgeball, and it was good. But Anchorman blew that out of the water, man. Blew it out of the water.
Fair point.
I think this is a question on the text line that's right up your alley. Are Red Lobster biscuits an appetizer? I say no, and here's my logic, right? I think anytime you're at a table and they bring you bread, or in this case, biscuits, at no complimentary, no charge, I don't think that counts as an appetizer, right? Like the pumpernickel at Cheesecake Factory, the bread at Outback, the biscuits at Red Lobster, those are not appetizers. That's a complimentary offering.
What is pumpernickel?
It's like dark bread, like brown bread.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's
what that bread is?
Yeah. They give you the white baguette and the pumpernickel at Cheesecake Factory.
I thought it was just like whole wheat bread.
Nah, it's pumpernickel. I think that's what it is anyway. Correct me if I'm wrong, at 560-22 on the Kendall Toyota, West Kendall Toyota text line.
But you order the cheesy biscuits from Red Lobster. They don't just give them
to you. No, they just give them to you.
I thought you have to order them.
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure they just bring them to you, the Cheddar Bay biscuits. Same thing with the salad and breadsticks at Olive Garden. Excellent, but not an appetizer, because they're going to bring that to you whether you want it or not. And you probably do, but they're still going to bring it to you.
Donald, for the first time this past weekend, I actually sent back food.
Really?
Yeah, for the first time ever. I ordered a sandwich somewhere, and it was cold when I got it.
Are you like me? Because, and I have sent food back a handful of times, right? Sometimes it's just not right. Sometimes there's a hair in it, which, you know, you have every right to send it back if that's the case. But I always feel guilty sending back food. Like even if the restaurant is clearly in the wrong, right? Like if I'm ordering, like, the Southwest sampler at On the Border, and there's a hair in my sampler, and I send it back, I'm perfectly in the right to do that. It still feels awkward sending back food.
Yeah, I usually don't, especially because I worked in food industry, so I kind of get it. But, like, for the first time ever, I was like, nah, man, can't do it. It was too cold. It was supposed to be a hot sandwich.
Really?
And the chicken was cold.
Man, like, have you ever sent back, like, a burger because it's not cooked right? Like if you ask for, like, you know, and a lot of times, I feel like at a lot, you know, I'm talking like casual places, like a TJ Fridays type, I feel like they ask you, how do you want your burger cooked, just to make you feel like, oh, I'm so glad you asked me that. And then they don't even follow, it's just well done no matter what, right? So if at the TGI Fridays, they ask me, how do you want your burger cooked, I'll say medium, and then they just make them all well done anyway.
Right,
If I order medium, you bring me a clearly well done burger, I'm going to send it back. I feel like they ask you how you want it cooked just to make you feel good, and then they don't follow through with it.
I've come to that realization, too, because I order, like, burgers and steaks medium, but I just feel like medium is something, for whatever reason, restaurants, it's hard to achieve for them, or
it
they
always
just don't
come,
do it.
It always comes back well done when you order it medium. Like, okay, if you're at, like, a really nice place, maybe not. Like, if you're at, like, a fancy place, you order a medium steak. I usually order a medium rare steak. And they're supposed to get it right, but if you're at like a Chili's or a TGI Fridays, and they ask you how you want your burger cooked, and you say medium, they're making them all well done. Like, they're not differentiating your burger from anyone else's. It's an assembly line.
They just have burgers ready to crank out, and they're just like, oh, he wants the medium well. Okay, that's the one all the way at the end.
Exactly. All right, it is time, friends, to gather around your radios, 1920 style, for a new edition of Clickbait.
We know you spend a lot of time online. Well, so do we. Here's tonight's edition of Clickbait on the Alex Dono Show.
Well, I'm honored somebody would even ask me this. Alex, can I name drop you to get into Prime 112 and Live Nightclub? You can try, bro, but they don't know who I am. Tito, how many times in my life do you think I've been to Club Live? Just take a guess.
Like 5?
0. I've never been to
really?
Club Live.
Oh, man.
I think there's one place I've been to. Does the Shore Club still exist?
Who? What?
The Shore Club. Is that still a thing?
Where is that?
It was on South Lake 2009. I went to the Shore Club. That seemed like a pretty big deal.
I've never heard of that.
I probably shut the place down. They saw me in there. Yeah, we can no longer operate.
Time to wrap this up, boys.
If we're letting this guy in, it's time to wrap it up, man. I've never been to Club Live ever. I've been to the Club Live at Hard Rock Stadium. If that's what he's talking about, maybe. Because I have been to Club Live at Hard Rock Stadium.
Boom, right there.
Name drop me, and there's like a 20% chance that'll get you in.
I'm with the Dono.
Yeah, right. That's all you have to say. All right, so clickbait. Let's see what we got here for tonight. I'm stalling as I turn the page in my notes. All right, how about this? We'll start in Houston, we'll end in Florida. Houston woman has a very good reason for biting off her friend's nose and swallowing it. Say what? A woman was arrested and accused of biting off a large piece of an acquaintance's nose and then swallowing it. Jessica Collins, 41, is charged with assault and bodily injury. I'm not hanging out with this Jessica Collins, I'll tell you that much. Cannibal. So her friend says that she went to a bar Wednesday night with her next-door neighbor, Ann Collins, who was temporarily staying with the neighbor. She said they returned to her home after the bar, and Collins demanded more alcohol and cigarettes. More alcohol and cigarettes, please. According to this friend, Tatiana, when she told Collins to leave her property, she said the woman jumped on her and pulled her to the ground by her hair. Collins then allegedly bit off a large piece of Tatiana's nose and swallowed it. I didn't have time to react to push her away. I think I was trying to fight back. But I guess Collins thought that she was in the right here. She Mike Tysoned this woman. It's a very, very sad and tragic thing. Florida man, this is so Florida, uses an anchor, like a boat anchor, as a weapon in grilled chicken dispute. This sounds like an argument at a Tito family reunion. A really nasty grilled chicken dispute. What do you take, grilled chicken or deep fried tenders? And it just escalates into a full brawl at the Banach family reunion.
I mean, I could definitely see that happening, especially with people in my family. So yeah.
Do you prefer bratwurst or a more traditional brown sausage?
I'm a fan of bratwurst.
Okay. I think I prefer the more traditional. So Fort Pierce, Florida, upset about ruined chicken, John Matthews is accused of doing what others might not, swinging a boat anchor around and cursing at a high volume. The apparent case of anchor-wielding poultry fan went down on the 4th of July at Fort Pierce Inlet State Park, according to an arrest affidavit. People on the beach about 6:45 p.m., flagged down a St. Lucie County Sheriff's deputy. The deputy was told a man, later identified as 41-year-old Matthews. Wow, so both of the lunatics we've talked about are 41 years old. Something about hitting 40, man. The midlife crisis kicks in. He was being aggressive towards another man and trying to fight. Witnesses stated Matthews was swinging his metal boat anchor around in the air and cursing loudly toward the other individuals on the beach. An anchor is an instrument or device dropped via a chain, rope, or cable, as if none of us knew that. Anchors are popular designs for tattoos, such as the classic anchor immortalized on Popeye the Sailor Man. Anchors are not popular choices for weapons, they write. Meanwhile, Matthews was accused of walking aggressively toward other males on the beach and attempting to engage in physical altercations. So he's swinging an anchor, ranting and raving. Now this gets a little serious, guys. Florida woman kills mother because she was upset about being left off the will. Man, how upset can you possibly be? Saying she was angry about being left without an inheritance, a Fort Lauderdale woman fatally beat her 85-year-old mother, police say. Gabriella Pereira, 53, is facing charges of premeditated murder and an aggravated battery on a person 65 years of age or older, the Sun Sentinel reports. I think it's actually kind of cool, real talk. I think it's kind of cool that you get a harsher penalty for beating up an old person. Like, that is the way that it should be, right? Like, if you're a 53-year-old woman, you're fighting a 55-year-old, fair game, similar in age. but you beat up an 83-year-old woman. That's not cool, man. 85, actually. Police say Pereiro became enraged with her mother on July 12th after she found out her siblings would be receiving an inheritance from their mother, but not her. Which makes me wonder, how bad of a daughter were you if she's given money to all the siblings and she's passing you up in the will? You destroyed my life, so I'm going to destroy you, she said to her mother, according to a detective. Pereiro told police she had been temporarily living with her mother in Fort Lauderdale when the incident occurred. While describing the incident to a detective, Pereiro said she pushed her mother on the floor, grabbed her by the arms, ripped her skin off, dear Lord, and grabbed the mother's neck with both of her hands, according to the Sun Sentinel. Lock this lady up and throw away the key. She's deranged. She's absolutely deranged.
Put her in a moat with gators.
Yes, I knew that was going somewhere.
Just keep her in a moat. Don't let her leave.
Well, you know how, like, you're at the zoo, right? And anytime there's the dangerous animals, right? The tiger enclosure, the gorilla area, lions, like, there's always a moat around there. Why don't we do, like, Hunger Games style? Like, throw her on the other side of one of those moats and, like, see if she can get out, right?
Like a pit of gators that's mostly water, and she has to find a way out, like, and she's trapped on, like, a peninsula style.
Right, like, put her on the Lion Peninsula. The only way she can get out of there is to get through a moat full of gators and see, like, who get, like, do you think she, A, survives and escapes, B, gator bait, or C, lion snack? What do you think happens
I think
there?
She's more gator bait. Well, I don't know. How close are these lions?
Well, it seems like the lions, they take a while to get motivated, right? It seems like the lion would probably scout you out for a couple of hours because maybe it's not hungry right away. So you get thrown over there at like 2 p.m., but the lion knows it's not dinner time till like 5:30. So she'd probably be running for the moat immediately. And the gators don't care what time it is. The gators go after you no matter what time of day it is. All right, friends, when we come back, we'll talk some NBA. Ira Winderman from the South Florida Sun Sentinel. We'll talk some Heat with Ira next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly. Auto Parts.